powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Look, Curtis, sometimes you read words and they just, you can't control how they come out of your mouth, okay? If I want to look at a list of headlines and say Jeff Passan instead of Jeff Passan instead of Jeff Passan, just let it happen. Let it happen.
I mean, he's like basically a weekly guest.
I never heard of him. Happy first day of March Madness, everyone. Who do you guys have going all the way, by the way? I know we did our brackets yesterday. Did you change them for the work bracket because there's higher stakes?
Go Cougs.
You took Houston still, Curtis.
I changed it last minute. Alabama. I'm leaning into the heel.
Oh,
I think they are just ridiculously good. And they're also not great people. So
it feels like the world will make it to where they win.
Yeah,
exactly. Well, I also took Alabama. I think I'm going to win our work bracket. I'm going to follow it up after completely dominating all of you during the NFL playoffs. I think during March Madness, I'm just going to have a clean sweep of bracket office pools. I feel good about it so far.
You know what? You're the type of person. I imagine you're the type of athlete that would make me talk trash. Because I didn't really talk trash.
Correct.
But you just talk a little too much, and I have to get involved in the trash talk.
Yes, just slip in. You just slip in little digs and little cuts, just little jabs once in a while, and then all of a sudden you freak out. I'm like, whoa, dude, calm down.
No. You don't get me to freak out, but I'm a say little something.
I think I would have been a great defensive back. That was my calling, I think. I really missed out there. All right, guys, a freak accident at the WBC has people questioning whether baseball's biggest stars should be playing at all. Here's what happened. Mets star closer Edwin Diaz, we miss you, Edwin, the best closer in all of baseball, was hurt during a celebration following Puerto Rico's win over the Dominican Republic. And they're attorney favorites. So obviously, Puerto Rico's team is very, very excited. It had happened here.
Hopefully, Edwin Diaz isn't really hurt. He might be. Gosh, that would be the only thing that could put a damper on a great night for baseball and a great win for Puerto Rico.
Now, it's hard to see what happened, but if you didn't see the clip yesterday, there's a crowd of players surrounding Diaz who is on the mound. They're all jumping up and down. Suddenly, Diaz is just on the ground. Like, he's probably just landed weird. It's clearly a freak accident. Like, no one stepped on Edwin Diaz. Edwin Diaz didn't get hit by something. Like, they were just jumping up and down, and I don't know, his leg buckled. Who knows what happens? All of a sudden, he's on the ground. And now, Bump, we've got some fuel thrown on the fire that was already brewing, a debate about the WBC. Should baseball's biggest stars be participating at all?
If they want to, they should.
Yes.
If they want to. If you want to represent your country, you should. I was looking up the international, like the biggest international baseball tournaments in the World Baseball Classic, obviously. Then you have the Baseball World Cup, and then you have the Olympics. There aren't many opportunities to represent your country, mm-hmm. and there's something... There's some pride that's behind that. And my man didn't get hurt playing.
No.
He got hurt celebrating. So I understand people are going to say, oh, you're worth X amount of dollars. You need to be focused on your team. And I think that, yes, your team should be your priority. But not everyone has, not even guys in the majors have the opportunity to represent their country to play international tournaments. So if you want to, I think so. But I also think that some of these guys probably reach a point in their career where they're like, all right, I did that already. So mm-hmm. it's not like they're going to, every single opportunity they get.
It's not required of
they're
anyone.
They're going to play. No, it's not required. It's like a friendly. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, they should be able to. My man's wasn't even playing. He was celebrating. Freak accident for sure.
I'm borrowing your opinion, so I'm going to let you sound off on it, but I want to tee you off on it because I thought it was a really good one. We were talking about this yesterday in our show emails, and you as a former athlete, all of us were high school athletes. One of the three of us went a little further with their athletic career. I'm not going to say
who
it was.
Only one of us has a 10th place ribbon.
Exactly. Thank you, Curtis.
You're welcome.
So we like to think that we can understand the mindset of an athlete, but that's not true. I think you can best, obviously, of the three of us, and it's not close, which is why I really liked your opinion about, like, you can't expect these guys to be competitive and driven in, like, these alphas in a clubhouse or a locker room and then also not want to compete. Like, you can't get both things. You know what I mean? It's like when people would freak out about Richard Sherman being hyped up after that play. You can't want someone to meet the moment and meet the expectation and be hyped and be athletic and be competitive and then not have that be who they are to their core.
No, it's in our DNA. I wake up in the morning and I look for reasons to compete. That's the reason why I play golf, because there's nothing else I'm going to compete in. I'm scared to blow my ACL or my Achilles, so I'm not doing pickup basketball. I'm for sure not playing in a flag football league to tear something else up. All I have is golf, because most of our existence is competing.
Right.
That's what drives us in the morning. That's what drives us at night. That's why we prepare. So these guys are doing it at the highest level of all time. So you can't expect these dudes just to turn it off. Like, no, nah, I'm good. I don't want to compete. Why would I want to compete? Why would I want to represent my country? Why would I want to have that camaraderie that you get on a team? That is the most fun I've ever had in my life, is playing on teams and competing with your boys. I've competed with dudes I don't even like, but in those 3 hours, I got you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's just something different about athletes. So for people to think it's easy for guys to see an opportunity to go out there and compete against the best and just say no, you're crazy.
Well, it comes from an ownership you don't have over athletes' drive and ambition. It also comes, or priorities or goals. It also comes from the idea that what doesn't matter to you shouldn't matter to anyone else, which doesn't, right. It isn't true. It's just like objectively not true. If you think the WBC means nothing, it means nothing to you. Who's to say it doesn't mean something to someone else? Who's to say that Edwin Diaz, if he tore his Achilles or ACL, who's to say that happening in the WBC for his country isn't more pointless than happening April 7th in like the second week of the regular season?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, both are kind of pointless.
Yeah.
Both have little to no impact on the entirety of, or both allow him to have little to no impact on the entirety of the season. It's a freak accident. Freak accidents happen. Some of the takes I've seen are, one, that the WBC is just another way to get money. Welcome to like sports and, I don't know, just the way the world works in general. Everything is a way to get money. Let's not point to the WBC and be like, wow, just another way for baseball to steal your money. That's what everything is.
Life is money.
Life is money. Secondly, I've seen some people say, well, this is different. Gavin Lux for the Dodgers tore his ACL at spring training, right? Accidents can happen at spring training. And they go, well, yeah, this was celebrating. You wouldn't be celebrating at spring training. No, but you'd be stepping out of your shower. You'd be hanging out with the boys playing video games. You'd be jogging on the field. What happened to Edwin Diaz isn't because he celebrated too hard. It's because it was a freak accident where he jumped, what, a couple inches into the air and landed strangely. Remember when Nate Burleson, God love him, was driving down the street and tried to keep a pizza box from falling in his back seat and then crashed and broke his arm? How is that any more random? Things happen. People are human, and athletes are just gonna eventually get hurt in some weird way or another sometimes. And don't look at the WBC as being the fault of it just because your own World Series hopes are hurt. Just admit that's what it is. You don't care about Edwin Diaz. You care about Edwin Diaz being good for your team.
Bars.
I'm just saying.
You said it all.
I'm just saying, like,
I have nothing to contribute.
I'm just so tired. I'm just so tired of like this kind of self-righteous take on the WBC being like, wow, this just isn't good for players. If players want to play in the WBC, it matters to that person. Just be real. It's not about Keith Olbermann. It's not about trying to not give in to this like capitalist goal. It's not about trying to keep players safe. It's because you're bummed now that you don't have this guy to watch during the season. It's because you're bummed now that your team doesn't have as great a shot to win. If Julio got hurt for the Dominican, I'd be really upset. I'd be stressed. We'd be talking about it. It'd be a whole thing. But like, what's to keep him from getting hurt at spring training the following week when he returns? Nothing.
It's all a gamble.
It's all a gamble.
It's all a risk. As soon as you step outside of your comfort zone, of your house, your apartment, it's all a risk. And whenever you are moving, it's a risk. Whenever you're celebrating, it's a risk. So simmer down now.
We are not the only ones who feel this way. Mookie Betts said that those kind of injuries can happen to anyone.
You know, those things, you know, that can happen to anybody at any given time. And I can always try and place blame on the WBC, but, you know, that's just a freak accident that could happen to anyone at any given time. And so, but to echo what Mike said, man, this is so much fun. It's so much fun. And, you know, I this is way better than getting four bats on the backfields. I mean, you know, this is just, you know, so I encourage those who are watching, you know, come join, come play and for Team USA, because this is a lot of fun.
It's exactly what you said, Bump. It's like, look, if I'm an athlete, what do I want to do? Participate in the WBC or play in a spring training game where I'm playing for two innings?
Especially when you already know you're on the squad. Mookie ain't worried about making the Dodgers. Julio's not worried about making the Mariners. Diaz wasn't worried about making the roster for the Mets. You just want to go out there and compete. Everyone has a purpose in life. At least I feel everyone has a purpose. Now, some people I feel like don't have the opportunity to live out their purpose. The way that our society is constructed, you got to make money, right? But these athletes have the opportunity to live out their dreams and their purpose. When you wake up in the morning, what motivates you? For them, it's competition. It's going out and representing your country. It's, you know, if Diaz has kids, you know how cool it is to have your kid watch you on the national stage or international stage and go out there and compete. So, yeah, if you are angry at Diaz or anyone else who has competed in this, it's because you're being selfish.
Well, yes.
You're making it about you. It's not about you.
Look at some of the performances we see in the WBC, specifically from like Mariners players. Harry Ford sticks out the most, but like Matt Brash was awesome for Canada. Julio made a huge diving catch. Like there is massive benefit to playing in this for a lot of guys. It's mm-hmm. not just simply a money grab. It's not simply just being like, I want to be away from my team. Like, no, these guys are developing and playing well and playing in big moments that, you know, for a lot of these guys may not get a chance to play in a big moment. How cool is it to see Mike Trout play in essentially an elimination game yesterday?
Yeah.
Which he's only made the playoffs one time in his career and only played like three games. The Angels got swept. Like, this is allowed for a lot of guys who we may not normally get to see in these kinds of moments come and deliver.
That's the thing. Just because something doesn't matter to you doesn't mean that that's a fundamental truth. Like, you aren't the arbiter of like what matters and what doesn't, especially when you're not the one participating.
Yeah.
It blows my mind. This idea of like, you know, it's like someone texting a dumb story, move on. What? I'm not. Okay. Then don't say anything. Like, if you don't watch the WBC, okay. Then don't suddenly decide to have this big opinion on the WBC once a player gets hurt just because you're upset that your season is now going to face a big obstacle. It's just,
I don't know any Mets fans, so.
Yeah. I would like Mets fans.
Text in right now. Tell us how you're feeling.
First of all, I feel like I would like Mets fans. I feel like I would like Knicks fans. I feel like I would probably like Jets fans. I empathize. I actually really like that Steve Cohen, Mets owner, is really, really pushing the limit of like what owners are pressured to spend and how people are pressured to be competitive. I don't want criticism of the WBC to be wrapped up in a freak injury that could have happened at any point. Any point.
Real ones know, too, man. Real ones know. You know that you're allowed to have your opinion. You go out and do that. And if you think the WBC is a load of you know what, then you don't have to watch it. But obviously it means something because you have stars showing up to play in this and you see the excitement after an upset. So it's real. It's a real thing. These guys really care about it. And it means something to them, even if it doesn't mean
anything. Well, and last point, when we talked about the Czech Republic, and for that matter, Great Britain, when we had Clinton Yates on the other day, he was talking about, look, like, part of what's cool about the WBC, when you cover teams where baseball is less a major sport, is the growing love of baseball among people who are watching it. So here in the U.S., obviously, we're focused on like, well, when's MLB season start, right? Because it's a huge major league here in the U.S. In other countries where they're trying to grow a love of baseball, that love is still growing and that love is still taking root. And the WBC does help with stuff like that. The Czech Republic team is a perfect example where they didn't even have like American baseball coaches in the country because of communism until 89. And they didn't start little leagues until the early 90s. Like, they are still developing and growing a love of baseball. This is one of the coolest stories about the WBC. This is why you watch it. And I don't know that baseball as a whole, most especially MLB, is in a place to try to pick and choose where love can be formed about the sport. You're trying to compete here in with a shrinking, you know, fandom of young people. You need to start growing that, and stuff like the WBC can help. That's all I'm saying. All right. Still to come, we've got some updates on Jalen Carter. We are going to take a look at the NFC West with Eric Williams. We've also got Shannon Dreher joining us from spring training coming up at noon. Right now, let's get to Headline Rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacey.
Headline number one, one of the most talked about draft prospects, Jalen Carter. He will not face any jail time for his role in a street race that left two people dead. He also had a day to forget, though, at Georgia's Pro Day yesterday, coming in at 9 pounds above his combine weight, and he did not finish all of his drills. What's the real headline?
A high pick means high stakes, and the Seahawks can't mess this up. Bump, there's a reason the headline isn't necessarily about Jalen Carter. We don't know that the Seahawks are picking Jalen Carter. We do know he's one of the top two defensive prospects, potentially the top defensive prospect in the draft, and the Seahawks at number five are in bad need of some help on defense. But the reason Jalen Carter's a story here is because the Seahawks might take him, and taking him is an inherent risk. People are getting flashbacks to some bad picks. That's why the story matters, at least in Seattle.
Yeah, because it affects us. If we were sitting at number 20, we would mention Jalen Carter.
Yeah,
we wouldn't
then
be
move
as
on.
Invested as we are now. But here are some things, according to CBS, okay, this is what CBS reported. Carter was sober, okay, and he did not leave the scene until he was told that he can leave the scene. Then he was asked to come back to answer more questions, and he came back. They said he has been just as good as you can be during this whole process.
Mm-hmm.
So we've heard conflicting stories. I've heard that he just left everybody there and then came back and then lied and said he heard the crash. This is what CBS is saying. He did not leave until he was told that he can leave, and he came back hours later because the police department asked him to come back. Now, we can't ignore what happened. Two people died in the situation. His actions directly didn't affect the car crash. He was just involved in a jacked up situation. So, and then we're also hearing about character issues about this kid. They're saying, like, is he a good teammate or not? And this typically happens with one or two prospects when you start getting closer to drive, especially if he's high up there.
Yeah.
It's messy. You don't know what to believe. You don't know what not to believe. If the Hawks pick up Jalen Carter at number five and he's available, that means that they did their digging and they believe what he's saying and they think that they can help develop this young man. Any way you look at it, jacked up situation. He will be in this league. It's just a matter of where now.
Mm-hmm.
Headline rewrite.
Headline number two, the NCAA tournament is underway. Got a couple games going on right now. What's the real headline?
Shout out to the annoying guy in every office, putting his hands on his hips and exclaiming, well, my bracket's busted. Don't be that guy today. Don't do it.
There's always one.
My bracket. There goes my bracket.
Or if the first game ends and it's correct. Hey! Still got a perfect bracket.
Oh, God. It's the person who, like, doesn't care about sports really at all. And then they participate in, like, a March Madness bracket challenge and then become the most insufferable person on the planet.
The last time I won a bracket was in 2008. I was with the Hawks. I picked North Carolina to win. They ended up winning. And that was a great feeling. Other than that, I'm always in the mix until about Elite Eight, Final Four, and then stuff happens.
Headline rewrite.
Headline number three, Aaron Rodgers said when it comes to the Packers, quote, my only demand is for transparency. What's the real headline?
Says the guy who holds the Packers hostage every offseason and also said he was immunized. Very transparent answer to whether or not you were vaccinated. He's only asking for transparency, okay? Just not from him. That's the difference.
Aaron Rodgers is the type of dude, he speaks in like run-on sentences. You talk about wanting transparency. I just want him to speak clearly and cut his words in half sometimes. Get right to the point, Aaron Rodgers. He doesn't do that. He likes the attention. And like I said, we said this plenty of times in this program, just no one really holds him accountable. He's one of those dudes that's had so much success in life and thinks he can say no wrong, do no wrong, that he lives the life the way he wants to live his life. It's worked out for him, but this is just funny. You want transparency? When I think of Aaron Rodgers, I can't think of just gray.
Everything's
just gray. It's no transparency.
Well, I think of someone who's on but doesn't realize he's on. Like, Aaron Rodgers, to me, strikes me as someone where it's like, he thinks he's the smartest dude in the room, and so he's not self-critical or self-reflective enough to realize when he's being either a hypocrite or completely ridiculous. Like saying, I only demand transparency when you or yourself are not transparent. Saying, you know, every single offseason, I don't know why you guys are making this a story. Anyways, I'll tell you whether or not I'm retiring in 2 weeks. Like, that's why it's a story. Like, it's just trying to pretend that you're above it all, but then playing into people's, not fascination with you per se, but to your own celebrity. You're a four-time MVP. You're one of the most famous players in football. You're a quarterback for a storied organization. Like, you recognize the impact you have, the influence you have, the fame you have. And instead of being responsible with it, you're critical of people's following of it.
That's the thing. I don't
even
think
though
he does.
You benefit from it.
I don't think he does. He lives in his own world. I don't think he realizes the impact of his words and his actions. I think that he is in a bubble. There's some people who reach a certain status. You put yourself in a bubble. You see what you want to see. You believe what you want to see. You read what you want to read. He's not the guy who's going to sit down on the couch and watch SportsCenter or get any type of other opinion.
Yeah.
It's like his opinion
is right.
It's it. There's no debating
right.
it. Yeah.
It's so pretentious. It is so pretentious. He's so unlikable, and I can't stand it because he's so good.
Baller.
That's the thing. It's like all this talk about, well, if he went to the Jets, you know, could he really demand a lot? Should the Jets give up a lot? The answer is yeah. Yeah, they could. Or yeah, they should, rather. Because, again, I know he's won one Super Bowl. Aaron Rodgers is one of the best quarterbacks I've ever seen play football.
Yep.
And to say he's not is just being a contrarian.
Well, he's a baller, man.
And that's what makes it so frustrating, because he's also just the worst.
That's what we do in our society. We tolerate. If you're good at something or you're beautiful, the tolerance on your actions and your words are extremely high. If you're not good at something and you're not attracted to some people, they're not going to tolerate anything. And Aaron Rodgers is one of the most attractive quarterbacks
Truly.
To ever play the game.
Truly. I mean, let's be honest also. If he's suiting up for the Jets week one, I'm watching that game. I don't care who they're
watching
playing.
Watching it.
I'm watching. Jets-Houston, watching.
Yeah.
Watching it.
Jets-Houston, I'm on it.
All right, there's a chance the Seahawks could get a difference maker on defense at number 5 overall, but the best option there on the field has some major questions off of it. The latest, next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Jalen Carter today, top prospect out of Georgia, pleaded no contest to misdemeanor charges of reckless driving and racing stemming from a crash that killed a teammate and UGA staffer on January 15th. Carter was not driving that vehicle. The staffer was. He was in another vehicle racing alongside them. He was sentenced to 12 months of probation, a $1,000 fine, and 80 hours of community service. He'll also attend a state-approved defensive driving course. Why does that matter? Because that's just one half of the story. The other half is that the Seahawks are in desperate need of defensive help. Carter was a potential number one pick, expected by many to be the best defensive player in the draft. He's now looking like he could be at the very least the second off the board after Will Anderson Jr. And the Seahawks are looking at a player who's facing character questions now, not only stemming from that accident, but also his pro day at Georgia earlier this week. He showed up 9 pounds heavier, was unable to finish position drills because he was breathing heavily and cramping, and he didn't participate in other workouts, including the 40-yard dash, nor in media sessions. So didn't do a media session at the combine, which I think he might have missed because he had to go turn himself in. And then also voluntarily not participating in this one. So he didn't work out in front of scouts back at the scouting combine, missed his media session, didn't answer questions here. He'll still do private interviews with teams, as I'm sure he did at the combine. But you're looking at the Seahawks, who have, you know, the potential ability to select Jalen Carter. But who are you getting with Jalen Carter? Before I throw to you, Bump, quickly from Albert Breer. This is Breer talking about what he sees from Jalen Carter.
It's hard to pass on Carter because he's the best player. And I'll give you this context, Mike, on Carter. Like last year when Georgia had all those freaks, I think it was like 5 first-round picks on defense, right? And Jalen Carter was still a true sophomore. I had a number of teams telling me, like, Jalen Carter was the best prospect on that defense. Right? Like, so... Like, we're talking about a guy who, I think, like, I've heard him compared to Warren Sapp. So, like, that the question is going to be whether or not, you know, you're willing to gamble on some of the off-field stuff and whether or not your program and your environment can absorb somebody like that and get the most out of him.
Would you gamble on him?
Yeah, I would. And I would because we got to realize what he's going through. He didn't finish the drills. First off, stop having linemen run the 40. It makes no sense to me why you want these big human beings to run 40 yards in a straight line when they're never going to do it in an NFL game. Receivers and DBs hardly do it. Eliminate the 40. I don't care that he didn't run the 40. Now you can look at his position drills and say he's out of shape, man. I heard Brock say there was too much jiggle on him or whatnot. And it probably was. Definitely was out of shape. Probably had too much jiggle on him. A little overweight. When I was a junior in college, I high ankle sprain, right? And I'm out for 4 to 6 weeks minimum, and I go into a depression. Like, I lost my identity. I'm here. I'm trying to help my team win games. I didn't shave for 2 weeks. I'm all scruffy. I didn't go to team meetings. I just got my work from my professors and stayed in my room because I was just in a dark place because I was no longer able to do the thing that I love. That's without someone dying. Now, this young man was racing his car. A teammate and a GA passes away. And he has all this pressure from the media. He has to answer all these questions from the media. There's rumors circling around about him. Oh, was he drinking? Was he not drinking? Did he flee the scene? Did he do this, that, and the third? There's character issues brought up in December. Like, put yourself in this young man's shoes and realize he's dealing with a lot. Wrong, right, or indifferent. He is dealing with a lot. So it doesn't surprise me at all that he showed up and he was out of shape. You think he's motivated to wake up like he did before the passing of his teammate every day at 6 o'clock to grind? No, he's got to work his way through this. Now, you have to take that into consideration. And as organizations, now you got to do your homework with this young man and see if you can trust him, because you're investing money in this young man if you get that opportunity to. And I think that if the Seahawks do their homework, if they, and another point, we're so big on mental health these days, which I'm glad. Mm-hmm. Growing up, I was taught, suck it up, don't cry, be a man, all this other stuff. I parent my kids a bit differently. But we're huge on mental illness and mental health and all that. Give this young man the same benefit of the doubt. His mental health, his what's going on with him, his emotions that he's feeling. So it definitely affects you. It affects your work day. It affects your relationships. And these aren't excuses. This is just the reality of it. So not surprised he was out of shape. Not surprised he was huffing and puffing. Stop making a young man run the 40. And he will talk to teams that are interested. So it's up to the organizations now. You guys do your homework. Do you trust? Do you think he's good to go? If you do, then you take the pick.
It's a really good point, though, because the question about Jalen Carter isn't whether or not he's good or whether or not he could play at the pro level. Like, first of all, you never have a definitive answer for any player in the draft whether or not he can succeed at the pro level. We've watched some of the best college players ever not find, you know, Hall of Fame status. I mean, Reggie Bush didn't become a Hall of Famer. He was the one of the best, if not the best, college player I've ever seen, personally, right? I mean, you've seen the same with Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow didn't become Peyton Manning. He was one of the best college football quarterbacks we've ever seen. So you can only project so much. The question isn't whether or not Jalen Carter has the potential to play. We all know the answer is yes. Mm-hmm. The question is whether or not he's the right guy for your program. And Bump, I think you highlight something really important, which is number one, the answer may very well be no, but the answer could also be yes. And you can't take a look with limited information we have and say, you know what, this person is a horrible person. Next. You don't know yet. That's why these teams are doing their due diligence, right? There is a narrative that I think a lot of people are projecting onto Jalen Carter for good reason, mm-hmm. which is that people with privilege, talent, and skill and status get away with a lot. That's true in and outside of football. That's true in and outside of football. And so I understand where that criticism comes from. But I think, you know, the mental health thing you highlighted is important, too. And the empathy thing is important, too. When you're looking at Jalen Carter as a very real potential number five pick for the Seahawks here, okay, this is someone where you're taking them. They could be the face of your franchise. It's worth looking at this person and trying to say, I'm going to try to take the most human approach and the most nuanced approach to, like, who is this person that I possibly can? Could he be like a spoiled, entitled, not hardworking person? 1,000%. Could he be someone who was involved in a horrible accident and then became kind of depressed and is still really talented but is working through some mental stuff? 1,000%. Like, either of those things can be true, and none of us know.
Yeah. And that's the whole point of my rant, is that I see more, he should have done this, he should have done that, he should be held accountable. All that stuff is true. He is being held accountable. He has 80 hours of community service. He has a misdemeanor. Fined $1,000. The legal system is making him be responsible for it. But I just want to point out the other side, too, because just like you mentioned, there's a possibility that that is what he's going through. There's also a possibility that he was reckless. He was being reckless. It might be a possibility that the Hawks or anyone sits down with this guy and, like, we can't trust him. He's irresponsible.
Sure.
That's a real possibility. But there's also a possibility where this young man was taught a lesson in the worst way, and he's trying to bounce back from that. But you're right. When you have a talent, you will overlook a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And he because the way our society is made up, he put himself in that position. No one put him in the position of privilege that he has. You know, his mommy and his daddy, when they decided to lay down and make a baby, they made a Jalen Carter, who is a big boy who can play some football, who will get some privilege that other people don't get because he provides a service in a way that no one else does. That's the reality of the situation. So just keep it real, man. I'm not saying this kid is completely innocent and woe is him and we need to nurture him. No, I'm saying just look at it from all angles because things are going down in this young man's mental that just we don't understand.
That's what you're saying. What you're saying, and I'm co-signing, is like we don't know the full answer, so there could be many answers. One of them is still, hey, bad news, move on. And the other one is, you know, hey, this is a guy who had some red flags but could be a good person and could be willing to change. None of us know the answer.
Nope.
So if you're sitting here saying, pass on this guy, he's horrible, he's a horrible person, like, all right, that's your opinion, but none of us know. Just like I don't know that he's a good guy. I have no idea.
Gotta trust Pete.
I will say this as we wrap this conversation up, but stick with the draft here. If the Seahawks pass on him at 5, they are in such dire need of help at that exact position, I am fully convinced those interviews went horribly.
Mm-hmm.
If the Seahawks pass on him at 5, the way that John and Pete love and appreciate athleticism and potential, the way that they are willing to take on guys for second chances, and the way that they need this position group more than any other, this was a bad interview.
Yep.
That's what passing on
one
him at
worst.
5 tells you. That's seriously. I am telling you that, like, on paper, without this happening, John Schneider would be licking his chops. So if they move on, then I think we can all be like, all right, hey. They made the call, they did their due diligence, and they didn't feel comfortable with it. We're going to stick with the draft here to continue this conversation because what do you do at number 5 overall? A higher pick means higher stakes. Can the Seahawks avoid mistakes of the past? That's next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
An update here on Edwin Diaz from Andy Martino, who works for SNY, covers the Mets. Diaz has a torn patellar tendon. Martino says more info coming shortly, but torn patellar tendon, very serious injury. Seahawks fans plenty familiar with it. Two tight ends suffered it recently with Will Disley and Jimmy Graham. It's a long recovery period. I don't know what rehab is going to look like for a baseball player, but I do know that not only is it incredibly painful, but it can also really hurt your like how dynamic you are as an athlete. He's a pitcher, so TBD if this is going to matter as much for him.
Oh, it is.
But you do know at the very least that he's done for the season.
Man, pitching is from the ground up.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? It's definitely going to affect him, man. That's unfortunate.
I was going to say burst. That's the word I was looking for. Oh, affects burst. Yeah. So that's the latest. Edwin Diaz, a torn patellar has a patellar tendon injury. More info coming shortly per Andy Martino. All right. Continuing this conversation, though, about the Seahawks draft. How can the Seahawks avoid mistakes of the past? That is the subject we're looking at right now. The Seahawks bump have the highest pick ever under Pete and John. They also might have the most draft capital overall with 3 picks in the first 37. Last year, they knocked it out of the park. In 2012, they knocked it out of the park with a historic class. But for about a decade in between, they had hits and misses. Now, this is not that weird for teams, okay? Hits and misses is more the norm than our 2022 and 2012 as classes. But if we're looking for what they can do well, you know, what worked and what didn't in between some of those classes. In the 10 years in between their two best draft class of 2012 and 2022, what approaches were risky or didn't result in great things? What approaches did we love? And now that they're looking at the number 5 overall pick, what are we hoping they do? I don't just mean a position group, you guys, when I'm talking about this. I mean, like, what kind of approach are we hoping they have? What lessons have we learned from draft misses?
With the number 5 pick, you could honestly go after the best guy on the board and probably get it right. Because we're saying, okay, you get the number 5 pick. Say Jalen Carter's there. You don't like what he has going. Okay, boom, you can be without him. You still got Tyree Wilson, a guy who was connected to this franchise forever until Jalen Carter started to slide. Say C.J. Stroud is available for some reason. Boom, he's the best player on the board. You can go after him. The only one I don't want to see is Will Levis. I'm sorry, Will. I'm not a hater.
Wow.
I'm just.
You sound like a hater.
I do sound like a hater. All right,
it's
you're going to make way more money than I did. So
yeah.
Who's going to have the last
It's okay.
Laugh?
We'll go in and edit all of the podcasts if they draft Will Levis. We're going to be like, we've always been a huge fan of you,
always,
Will.
Always. So honestly, they could go for the best available player and get it right. As long as you're not messing around with a quarterback that I feel like you that shouldn't be there. Because who's going to be available? Is it going to be two defensive players or is it going to be a quarterback? What's your situation? You need defensive linemen, you need defensive players, and you need eventually a quarterback who's going to be next up for Geno. I think with the Seahawks, the at least the phrase that I always hear when it comes to Seahawks drafting, when I talk to random people is, oh, they get too cute in the draft. They get
I've
too
heard
cute.
That a lot.
Like, they don't address exactly what they need. But I think at that number five, it's a win-win. You'll address what you need, and you're going to get a very good player at that. So just go with the obvious is what I'm saying with that number five. And if Jalen Carter checks out and he's available, you go with him. If Tyree is there, you go with him. If Will Anderson slips, which probably is going to happen, you go with him. So just go with the obvious pick at that number five.
I think another trick is get the most pro-ready guy. And like if John Schneider was listening to our show, I'm sure he's a huge fan, he'd be like, thanks. For the obvious. Oh, thank you. I didn't think about that. But what I mean by that is I think sometimes this team, and this is to their credit more so with day two picks where you don't have, you're not going to get a pro ready guy. But I think that sometimes this team has thought, okay, this guy is either a project or he's got red flags, but we believe so much in our culture and in our coaches and in our system that we think we can get the most out of him. And what I would say is sometimes you can't, no matter how successful you are as a culture or as a team. I think that we've looked at things like the decision to draft Bruce Irvin and thought, oh, he got here and he was in this culture and it changed him. Or another option, Bruce Irvin was just a good dude that just needed to mature. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, part of it was the Seahawks, but it's not like the Seahawks have some secret sauce to making guys with red flags work out. That just happened to be a pairing that worked out very well for both parties. So I think of the Malik McDowell pick, which is what a lot of people point to when they worry about Jalen Carter. You took someone that had some red flags that slipped in the draft that could have been a first round pick and wasn't because of lots of questions about work ethic and motor. You took him thinking he's got so much athletic potential. We can't pass on this guy. And we think we can get the most out of him.
What pick was that?
It was 35-ish.
Oh, McDowell was 35?
He was a second rounder. He was early second round.
Makes sense then.
Exactly.
More of a gamble.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But it was your first pick of the draft.
Yeah.
But the reason I bring all of this up is because for all the Malik McDowell comparisons, five is a lot different from 35.
Sure is.
Missing on five, as much as you think Malik McDowell hurts a lot more than missing on 35, even if it's your first pick.
Oh, yeah.
So I think just going with someone where you're like, we could put this guy in tomorrow and I have few questions about him.
Most likely, right, your pick is going to give you some type of return because you're picking at the number five. Let's listen to the top 10 picks from last year. All right, you tell me if they had a decent season or not. We got Trevon Walker. Didn't follow him too much. I'm not sure. The DN from Georgia went to Jacksonville.
I'm going to say sure.
Sure. Aiden Hutchinson. Yeah,
yes. Good defensive season. Player or rookie of the year candidate.
Yeah. Derek Stingley, DB, Houston. All right. Nothing too crazy. Sauce Gardner.
Of course.
Good. Kayvon Thibodeau.
Yeah.
Good. Ike Ngwanu.
I don't know too much
about him. Evan Neal. With the Giants, Daniel Jones had a good season.
Yeah.
That means he contributed. You got Drake London, good season in Atlanta. Number nine, you got Charles Cross, starter for your team. Number 10, you got Garrett Wilson.
Yeah.
Boom. Two players that we don't really know about in that top 10.
Right.
So just to support your argument, it's like, look, whoever you get at your number five spot, you're going to get some type of return. Are you going to get a Hall of Famer? Are you going to get a Pro Bowler? Who knows? I can't look at any of these guys right now and say they're going to be a Pro Bowler. I might look at Aiden Hutchinson, and I might look at, Aiden Hutchinson. Out of that first 10, I'm like, okay, that guy is probably going to be a Pro Bowler one day. So it's a gamble. And right, you don't have the 35th pick. You got the number five. They have narrowed it down. I heard Schneider say, we went from like 1,300 players to 300 players. And now, like you break it down, there's really only 15 guys who really have first round grades. After that, it's all mushed together. You have a chance to get a contributor right now, no matter who you pick, because the five pick is going to be obvious. I'm going to text you guys when one through four is in.
And say it's this guy.
And we're probably all going to say the same guy at number five. So just relax.
Well, and the reason we're talking about Jalen Carter is because, in all likelihood, it's going to be Jalen Carter. Now, you could still have a change, but you've got quarterback number one to the Panthers, quarterback number two to the Houston Texans, defensive lineman number three to Arizona, quarterback number four to Indianapolis, and then defense to Seattle, whatever quarterback, if Seattle wants to do that. But those are the needs, the greatest need, period, of the four teams drafting ahead of you. Quarterback, defensive line, quarterback. two great defensive linemen in Will Anderson Jr. and Jalen Carter means one of them is presumably available at five.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to be like, why are we talking about this guy? Or why aren't we talking about Will Anderson? It's because Will Anderson is now widely mocked to go number three to Arizona.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree. Just go for the pick that seems obvious.
Obvious.
And that was kind of what they did last year, honestly. Now, that wasn't the theme for 2012, which is kind of a fun twist, but that was the theme last year, and it worked out for them. We're the only...
Well, I don't think Kenneth Walker was obvious.
I was going to say the only pick that was critiqued was Ken Walker in the second round, but it ended up working out for them. But it wasn't as heavily critiqued in Seattle because people in Seattle knew more closely Chris Carson could be. Yes, they knew that running backs had been injured. They knew Chris Carson could be done playing, and they knew Rashad Penny couldn't stay healthy. So they were like, well, you don't really have a running back.
Yeah.
But outside of Seattle, people were like, this is stupid. What are you doing? All right, you can listen to us anytime or check back on the rest of the show if you miss it by subscribing to the Bump and Stacey podcast wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Apple. Please rate, review if you do subscribe. We've been taking a look around the NFC West ourselves, but let's get some help from someone else. Eric Williams. He joins us next. And forget a wild card. What are the Hawks' chances to win the division? Don't go anywhere.